So right now we are studying about the last earthly king that the children of Israel ever had. That is Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, who is the last king of Judah, the southern kingdom. That is the only kingdom that is left after the northern kingdom was destroyed by the Assyrians back in the days of Hezekiah. And now we're Judah has been on her own since that time and did not learn the lessons from what their brethren did and what happened to them, but rather they followed after their ways and became even worse after Hezekiah, who was a very righteous king, but his son Manasseh led them into much evil and the shedding of innocent blood, their children that they sacrificed to idols that God would not pardon. And though Manasseh himself repented late in his life, the people continued to follow evil. And even when Josiah, who was a very righteous king, came along and made the people swear to keep the Lord's law with all their heart, they only said the words. They were not sincere in that. And as soon as Josiah died, they went back to all of their evil and worshiping idols and doing wickedly. Even, of course, Josiah's own children, as sad as that has been to read, Zedekiah being one of those. The last of three of his sons that served as kings of Judah after him. And they were all evil. And one grandson, the one that reigned for 3 months before Zedekiah, was placed on the throne by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. He also did evil during that, during the time in which he was there and serving as king through those years, though we know that he survived for many more decades as a prisoner in Babylon, it's possible that he repented there, and we can only hope so for his sake, but we're not given the answer to that question, though we know at least his grandson, Zerubbabel, was very righteous and is the one that leads the captives back to Israel, the ones who had repented that had been preserved there in Babylon. And so, Lord willing, we'll be reading more about him not too far from now, because we are near the end of this is bringing us to the end of 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles and all of that, the history of the kings that Israel had. And so then what lies before us to study next is that period that's referred to as the post-exile period, that is, from the captivity in Babylon to the return to Israel, and what is taking us to the close of the Old Testament period. So that's the next section of our study, Lord willing. And Zerubbabel is going to play a prominent role in what we study about that. So more to come there, as that is the royal line from Jehoiachin, Jeconiah, that included Zerubbabel, his grandson, and will eventually be the line that Jesus descends from as the heir to David's throne. But Zedekiah is the last one to occupy that throne in the physical sense. What we've learned of him is that he did evil in the sight of the Lord. And we've been studying most of a lot more details in the book of Jeremiah, as we did last week particularly, and want to continue to this week, the book of Jeremiah contains far more details of the reigns of these last kings that Judah had, the sons of and the grandson of Josiah, because Jeremiah the prophet was there through all of that. The book of Jeremiah really is centered during that period of time. So we have most of the words of that very lengthy book pertaining to the events in Jerusalem and Judah during those years, and there's a lot of that, really even more in Zedekiah's time. So we saw in Jeremiah chapter 21 where the Lord, through Jeremiah the prophet, told Jeremiah, told Zedekiah that, and all the people, that the only way they could live as he set life and death before them, the way of life would be if they went out and gave up to the Babylonians when the siege came, and if they resisted, they would die. That we also saw into chapter 27 that came along with the warning from the Lord not to listen to the false prophets that were among them that were encouraging them to believe lies, that the Babylonians would not prevail against them. So here was Jeremiah letting them know what God really said, that the Babylonians would prevail against them and Jerusalem was going to fall. The Lord had appointed the city for destruction as punishment for all of the wickedness that they had done. And so at that point, the only way they could escape with their lives would be to surrender to the Babylonians and not to resist them. But they had these false prophets that were telling them, like Hananiah, the one that we saw in Jeremiah chapter 28, who said that being a son of a prophet, he told the people that within 2 years, Jehoiachin was going to come back with all the other captives and all the vessels that had been taken away there. He removed the yoke from that Jeremiah was carrying around on his neck at God's commandment to symbolize that they were going to be serving Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And so they would be carrying that yoke of service. They would be conquered and have to serve Nebuchadnezzar. Well, Hananiah broke that yoke from Jeremiah's neck and said that so would the yoke of the Babylonians be broken within 2 years. And everybody was going to be back and no more troubles. And so you had this truth of God being spoken by Jeremiah, but then you had all these lies that were the exact opposite that were being told by the false prophets. So the people were listening to two opposite things, they had to choose who they were going to listen to. It really came down to choosing to listen to the truth that was going to be very difficult as far as their circumstances, but they could live, or they can listen to the lies that sound a whole lot better. Everything's going to be great within 2 years. No more troubles. Just hang on, and within 2 years, all this is over and done with. So that was those were the smooth things, and they chose to listen to that, as we know. The Lord also told us about false prophets that were there with the captives in Babylon, the ones that had been taken there that were telling the same lies to them, telling them that they were going to be going back to their homes. In Jeremiah 29, Jeremiah the prophet sent a letter to them telling the people not to listen to the lying false prophets that they had with them there in Babylon, with those who had been taken captive there. They were warned not to listen to that, but rather he told them to build houses, plant gardens, have marry and have their children. They were going to be there for 70 years, and then they would come back. They had those false prophets in Jerusalem, also in Babylon. So Jeremiah had competition from them in Jerusalem. Ezekiel, who was with the captives, the Lord's prophet who was with the captives in Babylon, had the competition from the false prophets over there that were speaking lies to the people. Well, so it is, and so it has always been, so it remains today. The Lord's truth is right here in His Word. But how many are around opposing this, speaking falsely, saying the opposite from the devil? so that people can choose to listen to the lies that sound a whole lot better to them. Well, we need to be wise, and that's certainly a lesson that we can learn from our study of these events going on here. We've got to listen to the Lord's truth always and never listen to the voice of any of those strangers that were speaking falsely. So they were given that warning. Now, when we go to Jeremiah chapter 32, this is God's word that came here. This is during the siege, because we remember back in 2 Kings 25 verse 1 that the Babylonians came during Zedekiah's ninth year in the 10th day of the 10th month of the ninth year of his reign. So Jeremiah 32 begins saying, "The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord in the 10th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, which was the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar." Now, we know that the city, Jerusalem, fell in Zedekiah's 11th year in the ninth day of the 4th month. So the siege started in the ninth year. When we add that up, it was an 18-month siege beginning in Zedekiah's ninth year, ending in his 11th. This is what Jeremiah was speaking to Zedekiah during the 10th year of his reign. So this would put this pretty much right in the middle of the siege. The Babylonians have been there for a while, for some months, besieging the city. As day by day, as that siege continues, what's happening with food? Whatever supplies they have are dwindling. That's getting more scarce. Then disease comes, and so they're at least on the verge of, if not beginning, to suffer the effects of the siege with famine, with pestilence, as the Lord had warned them, and the sword yet awaits for when they when the city falls, if they continue to resist, which they are choosing to do, as the Lord had warned them before the siege ever came, that when it did, not to resist. Well, they haven't listened to that. So here's what God has to say from Jeremiah the prophet in the 10th year of Zedekiah, right here in the middle of the siege. Verse 2, "For then the king of Babylon's army besieged Jerusalem, and Jeremiah the prophet was shut up in the court of the prison, which was in the king of Judah's house." So where is Jeremiah the prophet right now? And why? Here he is shut up in the court of the prison that was in Zedekiah's own house. Why would he be a prisoner? What had he done? He spoke God's word, which was against them. Yes, it was God's word that rebuked them, that told them to give up to the enemy. So they accused him of being a traitor, of committing treason. They wanted to kill him. We do recall, and this is another example of what we looked at the end of chapter 1 of the book of Jeremiah. What was that promise that God gave to Jeremiah in verses 18 and 19 of chapter 1 of this book? The people were going to oppose him, weren't they? He promised Jeremiah that. They were going to oppose him. He was going to have persecution, but what did God also promise? He was going to protect Jeremiah. He was going to deliver them from their hands, that they would not take his life. They would not prevail against him. So was he going to have a lot of hardship, persecution, affliction? Would this be part of that? Yes. The ones who desired to have him killed, were they going to succeed in that? No. So Jeremiah is, it's bad enough to be in a siege. And Jeremiah knows what's going to happen. He knows how this is going to end. It's not, all the other people have been told by him, so that it's not a secret to them if they will listen to what the Lord said through the prophet. But Jeremiah certainly knows and believes exactly what's going to happen. So this is a difficult circumstance for him. To be God's prophet in a situation like that, he's having to go through the siege and all of the problems and the unpleasantries that are associated with that by virtue of the fact that he's there doing the job as God's prophet. So even without being directly persecuted by his own people for what he's saying, he's having to suffer hardship just being there with them during these circumstances as the Lord's punishing them. I mean, Jeremiah is really partaking of their punishments. I mean, he's not done wrong, but this is his burden as a prophet of the Lord and suffering for righteousness' sake. But then furthermore, on top of it, I mean, to be in a siege is one thing. That's bad enough. How about being a prisoner during a siege? I mean, that's as rough as it gets, really, isn't it? But that's exactly what's going on. So he is a prisoner while the city is under siege by the Babylonians. And so the only reason he's there in prison is because they put him there because of what he was preaching, the Lord's truth that was rebuking them and telling them of what was going to come. Verse 3, for Zedekiah king of Judah had shut him up, saying, wherefore dost thou prophesy and say, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall take it. That's why he was a prisoner. It says right there. And why do you prophesy and say? Well, what's the answer to that question? Yeah, because God said, told him to say that. I mean, as a prophet of the Lord, when God says, speak this to the people, what is he going to do? He's going to obey the Lord. I mean, is that a foolish question? Here he's asking the prophet, why have you said this, thus saith the Lord? Because thus saith the Lord. Because he said it. That's the answer. This is what God said. And you're going to make him a prisoner for that? Yes, that's what he did. So in verse 4, it says, and Zedekiah king of Judah shall not escape out of the hand of the Chaldeans, but shall surely be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon, and shall speak with him mouth to mouth, and his eyes shall behold his eyes. And he shall lead Zedekiah to Babylon, and there shall he be until I visit him, saith the Lord. Though you fight with the Chaldeans, you shall not prosper. So that's what Jeremiah had said, and he's made a prisoner for saying that. Now, if we skip down here in the chapter to verse 26, and let's read 26 to 35. And by the way, recommendation. Read the book of Jeremiah, read that. This is a good opportunity to read that book again, and with what we're going through in our study here, and it may help, may give an opportunity to understand some of the passages a little bit better as we're getting to view all of these circumstances and exactly what's going on there. So we're hitting some of the points that tie into this very directly, but we are skipping a lot because it's a 52-chapter book. But we can see how much of this ties into what we've been studying recently during these last years of the kingdom of Judah. So in verses 26 through 35, it says, then came the word of the Lord unto Jeremiah, saying, behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the Chaldeans and into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And the Chaldeans that fight against this city shall come and set fire on this city and burn it with fire and burn it with the houses upon whose roofs they have offered incense unto Baal and poured out drink offerings unto other gods to provoke me to anger. So just a pause there. They were using, here they were in a city. Who gave them Jerusalem? I mean, here was this city that the Lord had gave to them, the city of David, that David took from the Jebusites, that the Lord gave into their hands. And it was made by David their capital. And God made it the city where his authority would be. there at the temple. So this was the chosen place by God for the nation of Israel to come and obey the commandments for the feast days three times a year. This is where the temple was, where the Lord's altar was. This was the seat of his authority in Israel. All of that here centered in Jerusalem, given to them by the Lord. And he gave them their, they had their houses there in that city. So the Lord had blessed them greatly. Now, what have they done with those things? What have they done with the Lord's own temple? Turned it into a place of idol worship. And what had they done with their own houses? Using their houses and the roofs of their houses to worship the host of heaven and their idols. So all that God has given to them, instead of using it to serve the Lord and accomplish his will and show their thanksgiving to him, they're using it to do wickedly. So what's the Lord going to do with all of that, including the temple and including all of their houses? You're going to take all of my things and use it like this? What does the Lord do with it? Destroys it. And so he's pronouncing destruction on all of it, but reminding them of why. Because all of these things God's going to destroy, they had used for evil. So were they worthy of that? Was it unfair that God was going to have all of their houses burnt down and destroyed, and even the temple? I mean, this was very fair judgment from the Lord. They were worthy of it. So verse 30, "For the children of Israel and the children of Judah have only done evil before me from their youth. For the children of Israel have only provoked me to anger with the work of their hands, saith the Lord. For this city hath been to me as a provocation of mine anger and of my fury from the day that they built it, even unto this day, that I should remove it from before my face. Behold, of all the evil of the children of Israel and of the children of Judah, which they have done to provoke me to anger, they, their kings, their princes, their priests, and their prophets, and the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." Who does that leave out? That's all of them, from top to bottom and everybody in between. That's everyone. Verse 33, "And they have turned unto me the back and not the face, though I have taught them, rising up early and teaching them, yet have they not hearkened to receive instruction. But they set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to defile it. And they built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire unto Molech, which I commanded them not. Neither came it into my mind that they should do this abomination, to cause Judah to sin." So here the Lord is telling them exactly what he's going to do and why. And as a result of these words that came through the mouth of Jeremiah, Jeremiah sits in prison there in the court of the prison right there in Zedekiah's house. Does that speak well of the king, that he's going to imprison the Lord's prophet for speaking what God told him to say? A righteous man doesn't do that. Chapter 34, Jeremiah 34. "The word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, when Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army, and all the kingdoms of the earth of his dominion, and all the people, fought against Jerusalem and against all the cities thereof." So this is also during the siege. This continues here. "Saying, Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, Go and speak to Zedekiah, king of Judah, and tell him, Thus saith the Lord." So now, these aren't words for just the general populace. These are words God sends Jeremiah to speak directly to the king himself, to Zedekiah. "And tell him, Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire." I mean, the Lord's not just saying this one or two times, is he? I mean, over these years, how many times has the Lord been saying this through Jeremiah's mouth? I mean, we have many of those occasions recorded right here in the book of Jeremiah. How many other times did he say it with his mouth? Well, we know many times they were told this, but it's another reminder here to Zedekiah at the time in which he's under siege. Verse 3, "And thou shalt not escape out of his hand, but shalt surely be taken and delivered into his hand, and thine eyes shall behold the eyes of the king of Babylon, and he shall speak with thee mouth to mouth, and thou shalt go to Babylon. Yet hear the word of the Lord, O Zedekiah, king of Judah. Thus saith the Lord of thee, thou shalt not die by the sword, but thou shalt die in peace and with the burnings of thy fathers, the former kings which were before thee. So shall they burn odors for thee, and they will lament thee, saying, Ah, Lord, for I have pronounced the word, saith the Lord. Then Jeremiah the prophet spake all these words unto Zedekiah, king of Judah, in Jerusalem. So the Lord's extending a blessing, an offer to Zedekiah. His end doesn't have to be like his brother, Jehoiakim, who had his body cast out like the wild, the donkey. The one that took his penknife and cut up God's word and threw it in the fire. Zedekiah is doing some evil things, as we can see, and there's certainly no justification or excuse from it. And he's even imprisoning the Lord's prophet. But is he going as far as his brother Jehoiakim did? We haven't seen that. And so the Lord is giving him an opportunity to be lamented in his death that he says will come in Babylon, but not by the sword. And then he said, verse 6, then Jeremiah the prophet spake all these words unto Zedekiah, king of Judah in Jerusalem. When the king of Babylon's army fought against Jerusalem and against all the cities of Judah that were left, against Lachish and against Azekah, for these defense cities remained of the cities of Judah. This is the word that came unto Jeremiah from the Lord. After that, the king Zedekiah had made a covenant with all the people which were at Jerusalem to proclaim liberty unto them, that every man should let his manservant and every man his maidservant, being a Hebrew or a Hebrewess, go free, that none should serve himself of them, to wit, of a Jew his brother. Was that a good thing that he told the people to do there? To free their brethren that they had brought into servitude under bondage? Well, yes. So that was a good thing to do. So Zedekiah is commanding them to do something good and right. It does beg the question, well, if that's a good and right thing to do, why hadn't he commanded that to be done before now? What happened that made him to do that at this time? Well, of course, with the horrors that were going on with the siege and famine. Sometimes people have to get into very low circumstances to finally get around to doing something good or right that they should have done long before then. But the fact is, that should have been done, hadn't been done, but now Zedekiah commands them to do that. So in verse 10 it says, now when all the princes and all the people which had entered into the covenant heard that everyone should let his manservant and everyone his maidservant go free, that none should serve themselves of them any more, then they obeyed and let them go. But afterward they turned and caused the servants and the handmaidens which they let go free to return, and brought them into subjection for servants and for handmaids. So when the king told them to do it, did they technically do what he said? They did. And then they took them right back in so they could tell the king, they could say, well, we did what you said, king. But did he mean for them to set them free just to take them immediately back into bondage again, just so that they could check a box and say, well, they obeyed that commandment to set them free very temporarily? No. So in verse 12, therefore the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, I made a covenant with your fathers in the day that I brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondmen, saying, at the end of 7 years, let you go every man his brother, a Hebrew, which hath been sold unto thee, and when he hath served thee 6 years, thou shalt let him go free from thee. But your fathers hearkened not unto me, neither inclined their ears. And you are now turned and had done right in my sight in proclaiming liberty every man to his neighbor, and you had made a covenant before me in the house which is called by my name. But you turned and polluted my name and caused every man his servant and every man his handmaid, whom ye had set at liberty at their pleasure, to return, and brought them into subjection to be unto you for servants and for handmaids. Therefore thus saith the Lord, ye have not hearkened unto me in proclaiming liberty, every one to his brother and every man to his neighbor. Behold, I proclaim a liberty for you, saith the Lord, to the sword, to the pestilence, and to the famine, and I will make you to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth. So he said he was going to give all of them the kind of liberty they just gave the ones under them. What kind of liberty was that? Well, it wasn't. I mean, they claimed they were setting them free, but then they didn't. So the Lord was going to give them, they were going to reap exactly what they had sown. So he was going to give them according as they had given to their own brethren here. And he was going to deliver them to the sword, famine, and pestilence. Any survivors were going to be taken away unto all the kingdoms of the earth. And I will give the men that have transgressed my covenant, which have not performed the words of the covenant which they had made before me, when they cut the calf in twain and passed between the parts thereof, the princes of Judah and the princes of Jerusalem, the eunuchs and the priests and all the people of the land which passed between the parts of the calf, I will even give them into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of them that seek their life. And their dead bodies shall be for meat unto the fowls of the heaven and to the beasts of the earth. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, and his princes will I give into the hand of their enemies, and into the hand of them that seek their life, and into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which are gone up from you. Behold, I will command, saith the Lord, and cause them to return to this city, and they shall fight against it, and take it, and burn it with fire, and I will make the cities of Judah a desolation without an inhabitant. So the Lord was not pleased with that hypocritical action that they took at this time in Zedekiah's reign while they were under this siege. Now over to chapter 37, Jeremiah chapter 37. It says, "And King Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, reigned instead of Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, made king in the land of Judah. But neither he nor his servants nor the people of the land did hearken unto the words of the Lord, which he spake by the prophet Jeremiah. And Zedekiah the king sent Jehukal the son of Shelemiah and Zephaniah the son of Maaseiah the priest to the prophet Jeremiah, saying, Pray now unto the Lord our God for us. Now Jeremiah came in and went out among the people, for they had not put him into prison. Then Pharaoh's army was come forth out of Egypt, and when the Chaldeans that besieged Jerusalem heard tidings of them, they departed from Jerusalem. Then came the word of the Lord unto the prophet Jeremiah, saying, Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, Thus shall ye say to the king of Judah that sent you unto me to inquire of me, Behold, Pharaoh's army, which has come forth to help you, shall return to Egypt into their own land, and the Chaldeans shall come again and fight against this city and take it and burn it with fire. Thus saith the Lord, Deceive not yourselves, saying, The Chaldeans shall surely depart from us, for they shall not depart. For though you had smitten the whole army of the Chaldeans that fight against you, and there remained but wounded men among them, yet should they rise up every man in his tent and burn the city with fire. And it came to pass that when an army of the Chaldeans was broken up from Jerusalem for fear of Pharaoh's army, then Jeremiah went forth out of Jerusalem to go into the land of Benjamin to separate himself thence in the midst of the people. And when he was in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward was there, whose name was Arijah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Hananiah. And he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, Thou fallest away to the Chaldeans. Then said Jeremiah, It is false, I fall not away to the Chaldeans. But he hearkened not unto him, so Arijah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. Wherefore the princes were wroth with Jeremiah, and smote him, and put him in prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe, for they had made that the prison. When Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon and into the cabins, and Jeremiah had remained there many days, then Zedekiah the king sent and took him out. And the king asked him secretly in his house and said, Is there any word from the Lord? And Jeremiah said, There is. For, said he, Thou shalt be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon. Moreover, Jeremiah said unto King Zedekiah, What have I offended against thee, or against thy servants, or against this people, that you put me in prison? Where are now your prophets which prophesy unto you, saying, The king of Babylon shall not come against you, nor against this land? Therefore, hear now, I pray thee, O my Lord the King, let my supplication, I pray thee, be accepted before thee, that thou cause me not to return to the house of Jonathan the scribe, lest I die there. Then Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison, and that they should give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street until the bread in the city was spent. Thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. Now this was obviously before what we read a little bit ago in chapter 32, when Jeremiah was in that court of the prison in Zedekiah's house. This original imprisonment started under these circumstances he reveals here. Somewhere in there, the Babylonians had come, and it seems likely this could have been at the time in which Jehoiachin, when the main wave of captives had been taken, when the Babylonians came and did that. We know that Jerusalem did not endure a lengthy siege, and it did not fall at that time. That's when he put Zedekiah on the throne. It could very well have been, because he mentions Zedekiah coming to the throne at the beginning of this chapter, so it looks like that may be that time in which the Egyptians made a revolt and drew away the Babylonians' attention so that they departed from Jerusalem for a time. But the Lord promised they would be back. Now, the false prophets had said they weren't going to come against them at all in the first place, and they've been proven wrong on that, but they were going to come back. And at that time when they left, and Jeremiah left the city of Jerusalem, but they accused him again of being a traitor, and that's when he was put in this Jonathan's house, and obviously it was very difficult, his circumstances there, and he could see that he wouldn't survive long if he remained under those circumstances, and in keeping with the Lord's promise that Jeremiah was not going to die at their hands, when he made this plea to Zedekiah put him in the court of the prison. So that was a partially good thing. At least he improved his circumstances. But we saw there in chapter 32, the reason why Zedekiah didn't set him free was still because of these things that Jeremiah was saying. And here's Zedekiah asking, is there any word from the Lord? Does he think now that the message is going to change? He's obviously hoping it's going to be something different now. It's not. This has been Jeremiah's word, God's word, consistently all the way through, and remains so. Which is why we see that Jeremiah continues to remain a prisoner. In chapter 38, then Shephatiah the son of Mattan, and Gedaliah the son of Pasher, and Jukal the son of Shelemiah, and Pasher the son of Malchiah, heard the words that Jeremiah had spoken unto all the people, saying, thus saith the Lord, he that remaineth in this city shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live, for he shall have his life for a prey and shall live. Remember, the Lord set before them life and death with that. And so these ones heard that, and thus saith the Lord, this city shall surely be given into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall take it. Therefore the princes said unto the king, we beseech thee, let this man be put to death. For thus he weakeneth the hands of the men of war that remain in this city, and the hands of all the people in speaking such words unto them. For this man seeketh not the welfare of this people, but the hurt. Now the first part of what they said there, when they said that Jeremiah was, with those words, it was weakening the hands of the men of war that remained in the city. Was that true? If they listened to what the Lord was saying through Jeremiah, would that weaken the hands of the men of war that were in that city? I mean, they were resisting. And if they listen to what God says, and they're going to quit resisting and give up, well, from a military standpoint, is that going to be a weakening of their hands and resisting? Yes, that's surrender. So that part of what their accusation is was true. But it's the opposite of the last part, and there's where the real crux of the matter is. They were saying that was therefore seeking the hurt of the people, not their welfare. But in fact, it was the opposite. God said it was by giving up to the Babylonians that they could live. That was the only way they could live. And if they didn't, if they continued to resist, they would all die by sword, famine, or pestilence. So he was, in fact, seeking the welfare of the people. God was seeking their welfare by telling them, this is the way you can live. But they were not going to resist and prevail against the Babylonians. That was the fact of the matter. So yes, those words, when God is telling them to surrender, yes, that's going to cause the people to give up. That's what God was trying to get them to do. But that would not be for their hurt. That was going to be for their good. But they are, as you can see, they're accusing him of being a traitor and committing treason by saying words like that. But this is God, these are God's words, and God was the one that was going to make this happen. Then Zedekiah the king said, behold, he is in your hand, for the king is not he that can do anything against you. Then took they Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon of Malchiah, the son of Hamalek, that was in the court of the prison, and they let down Jeremiah with cords. And in the dungeon there was no water but mire. So Jeremiah sunk in the mire. Now when Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs which was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon, the king then sitting in the gate of Benjamin, Ebed-Melech went forth out of the king's house and spake to the king, saying, my lord the king, these men have done evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the dungeon, and he is like to die for hunger in the place where he is, for there is no more bread in the city. Then the king commanded Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, take from hence 30 men with thee, and take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he die. Now with all these actions, Zedekiah he's a very weak man. You can see that. He went along, he assented to what the princes demanded of him to put Jeremiah in that dungeon. Now when somebody comes along and points out how evil that action is, he recognizes that is so and permits him to take 30 men to go and rescue Jeremiah out of that. So Zedekiah was very weak. He was going along with whatever the princes or the people desired, even when he knew better. But when we see his heart towards Jeremiah, did he desire Jeremiah to be killed? He clearly didn't. So when Jeremiah begged him to remove him from Jonathan's house in that prison there so that he wouldn't die, Zedekiah did that. Now when he's sunk in the mud with no food in a dungeon, he agrees for Ebed-Melech to rescue him from that. So verse 11 says, so Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury and took thence old cast clouts and old rotten rags and let them down by cords into the dungeon to Jeremiah. And Ebed-Melech the Ethiopian said to Jeremiah, put now these old cast clouts and rotten rags under thine armholes, under the cords. And Jeremiah did so. So they drew up Jeremiah with cords and took him up out of the dungeon, and Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. Then Zedekiah, so that we see a lot of the persecution that Jeremiah suffered. The princes wanted to kill him, and they had that in mind, but God rescued him from that. Now this Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, later we read about how the Lord spared his life from all of the evil that came upon the city because of this action when he saved Jeremiah the prophet. So Ebed-Melech was a good man, and God saved him for that. Verse 14, then Zedekiah the king sent and took Jeremiah the prophet unto him into the third entry that is in the house of the Lord. And the king said unto Jeremiah, I will ask thee a thing, hide nothing from me. Then Jeremiah said unto Zedekiah, if I declare it unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? And if I give thee counsel, wilt thou not hearken unto me? So Zedekiah the king sware secretly unto Jeremiah, saying, as the Lord liveth that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life. Now it's interesting, Zedekiah there swore by Jehovah with this oath, that he was not going to have Jeremiah killed and not given to the hand of those who would kill him. Verse 17, then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, thus saith the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, if thou wilt surely go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, then thy soul shall live, and this city shall not be burned with fire, and thou shalt live and thine house. But if thou wilt not go forth to the king of Babylon's princes, then shall this city be given into the hand of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand. And Zedekiah the king said unto Jeremiah, I am afraid of the Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans, lest they deliver me into their hand, and they mock me. Who was he afraid of? Was he afraid of what God was going to do to him if he didn't obey? Or was he afraid of being mocked of the captives in Babylon if he gave up? Might they call him a coward for giving up? Well, they might, ones who didn't understand. But the fact is, the Lord was commanding this. And this would be the way he could save the city and all the lives of these people in his own life too. But Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver thee. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of the Lord which I speak unto thee, so it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. But if thou refuse to go forth, this is the word that the Lord hath showed me. And behold, all the women that are left in the king of Judah's house shall be brought forth to the king of Babylon's princes, and those women shall say, thy friends have set thee on and have prevailed against thee. Thy feet are sunk in the mire, and they are turned away back. So they shall bring out all thy wives and all thy children to the Chaldeans, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand, but shalt be taken by the hand of the king of Babylon, and thou shalt cause this city to be burned with fire. Then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. But if the princes that hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king, hide it not from us, and we will not put thee to death, also what the king said unto thee, then thou shalt say unto them, I presented my supplication before the king that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. Then came all the princes unto Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. So they left off speaking with him, for the matter was not perceived. So Jeremiah abode in the court of the prison until the day that Jerusalem was taken, and he was there when Jerusalem was taken. Now, was that a lie that Jeremiah told when they said, what did you say to the king, and what did he say back? And he told them, I asked not to be put back in that prison, and he said I wouldn't. Well, no, that was 100% true. Now, was he obligated to tell them the other part that the king told him not to tell? No, and he just left that part out. But he didn't deceive them. He told them exactly the truth, 100%. He just didn't tell them everything, and he didn't need to tell them everything. So that's what happened there. But Zedekiah, as we know, was given this choice to obey the Lord. Now, who was the Lord giving any blame to Zedekiah for the fall and destruction of the city, for Zedekiah refusing to obey the command to give up? He said, you will cause this city to be burned with fire. Of course, I mean, the ultimate cause was all that wickedness that was done, but the Lord was still providing a way for the people to live here. And for this siege not to continue on to its end, where they would all die by sword, famine, and pestilence. Zedekiah's own children were going to be taken by the Babylonians. So this was those were some very strong words. He wanted to know what the Lord had to say, and that was it. And it was very clear and plain, and so he had a choice to make. Obey God, and what's the consequence of that? In his mind, he could end up being mocked to the people, although the Lord said that you're not going to be delivered to those ones to do that. Versus, what are the consequences if he doesn't give up? They all die. But who is he afraid of? Men or God? And so we can see the weakness there in Zedekiah. Now, does he have a hatred for the word of God like his brother Jehoiakim? We don't see that. We don't see righteousness. We don't see a willingness to serve God and to obey him. He's does evil in the sight of the Lord. And we've seen so many examples of that. He's very weak, but he doesn't have he doesn't hate God's word to the extent that Jehoiakim did. And God was giving him opportunities to have a different outcome and for the people from this. But when it comes down to the bottom line, obey God or not, what does Zedekiah choose? He doesn't obey. So he's not a righteous man. He did do evil in the sight of the Lord and would not obey him, even with all of this that God said through Jeremiah. But at least he was a tool that God used to help preserve, to keep his promise, to preserve Jeremiah's life. So he doesn't have Jeremiah's blood on his hands, so that's something he will not have to answer for. So that takes us to the end of what we want to look at, other than the very last part in the book of Jeremiah that records the fall of Jerusalem. So Lord willing, next week we'll look at that last bit of information there and the immediate aftermath of the fall. So that's really going to carry us on into after Zedekiah's reign is over and Jerusalem falls, with what happens in that aftermath with the people that are in Jerusalem and in that vicinity. So that's really going to take us to the beginning of the next segment of our study concerning what happens to the children of Israel after they no longer have a king. So we'll start into that part, and so we'll have a bit more to look at from the book of Jeremiah and some other passages to finish up 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles. So we're going to be bringing all of that, hopefully, to a close next time together, next Lord's Day. But let's go to our Heavenly Father now in prayer.